1500 and 2000 UT.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners, and happy Friday. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the July 14th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off in Ivory Coast, which will host the next Men's Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in January 2024. On Thursday, Ivory Coast was the venue for another big football event, Africa's qualification tournament for the 2026 FIFA World Cup, which will be held in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. A total of 54 African teams were drawn into 9 qualifying groups. The top team in each of the 9 groups, which contains 6 countries, qualifies automatically for the expanded 48-team World Cup finals in 2026. And the 4 best runners-up will enter an African playoff stage where the winners will feature in inter-confederation playoffs. So, Africa is guaranteed 9 places at the next Men's World Cup, and a 10th team could be added via the playoffs. Before the draw ceremony in the Ivorian economic capital of Abidjan, Gianni Infantino, the president of World Football's governing body FIFA, walked to the stage and had this to say.
We are FIFA, we are Africa, we are 26. We will have all African countries participating in what will be an incredibly exciting and passionate qualification path to the World Cup 2026. We are looking forward to this draw, but then most importantly to the games and all the emotions that we'll feel in this incredible continent. So here from Abidjan, Côte d'Ivoire, beautiful city, beautiful country, to the whole of Africa and to the entire world. Welcome. This is the trophy that all of you in this room want to win. Maybe in 26. Well, that's all I wish to all of you, but I wish the same to every other country in the world as well. Here it is. It's already in Africa. It's the first preliminary draw for the World Cup. The best of luck to all of you, and thanks for everything.
FIFA President Gianni Infantino speaking at Africa's 2026 World Cup qualifying draw ceremony in Abidjan, Ivory Coast. The African World Cup qualifying matches will kick off in November 2023. Let's take a look at the 9 groups. Group A has Egypt, Burkina Faso, Guinea-Bissau, Sierra Leone, Ethiopia, and Djibouti. Group B has Senegal, the reigning African champion, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Mauritania, Togo, Sudan, and South Sudan. Group C has Nigeria, South Africa, Benin, Zimbabwe, which recently had a FIFA suspension lifted, Rwanda, and Lesotho. Group D has Cameroon, Cape Verde, Angola, Libya, Eswatini, and Mauritius. Group B has Morocco, which made a historic run to the semifinals at the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar. Also in that group, Zambia, Congo Brazzaville, Tanzania, Niger, and Eritrea. Group F has Ivory Coast, Gabon, Kenya, Gambia, Burundi, and Seychelles. Group G has Algeria, Guinea, Uganda, Mozambique, Botswana, and Somalia. Group H has Tunisia, Equatorial Guinea, Namibia, Malawi, Liberia, and Sao Tome and Principe. And finally, in Group I, we have Mali, Ghana, Madagascar, Central African Republic, Comoros, and Chad.
Spot
hearty greetings. This is Emmanuel Amuneke, former Nigerian player, former Tanzanian coach. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Many thanks. Remain blessed and stay safe. God bless you.
With the FIFA Women's World Cup kicking off July 20th in Australia and New Zealand, another big international football tournament, the CONCACAF Gold Cup, will hold its title match this Sunday here in the United States. Mexico, an eight-time Gold Cup champion, will play Panama near Los Angeles, California. The Gold Cup is awarded to the men's continental champion of North America, Central America, and the Caribbean. I asked my VOA colleague, Mukbil Yabaro, to look back at the Gold Cup's group stages.
Sonny, when it came to the group play was very, very exciting from the CONCACAF. Group A was USA, Jamaica, Trinidad and Tobago, St. Kitts and Nevis. USA and Jamaica comfortably came out of that group. The only games that possessed any kind of challenge for either team was when they played against each other in that draw. Group B, Mexico, Qatar, Honduras, and Haiti. Mexico and Qatar qualified to the knockout phases. And similarly, Mexico seemed like they dominated that entire group, except for when they played against Qatar on their last game. It felt almost like they knew they were going to go to the next knockout phase, so they didn't really play to their potential, and they ended up losing to Qatar 1-0. Group C, Panama, Costa Rica, Martinique, and El Salvador. Panama and Costa Rica came out of that group, which was relatively challenging. Panama came out with two wins and a draw. Costa Rica had a win, draw, and a loss. Lastly, Group D, Guatemala, Canada, Guadalupe, and Cuba. Very challenging games for all teams, but Guatemala and Canada came out of that group. As for the knockout phases, Panama versus Qatar, 4-0 for Panama. Panama, to me, has been the most exciting team so far. They've really shown a lot of growth from their past teams, and you can see what they've done from a coaching perspective and team perspective. That's why they are in the finals. USA versus Canada was a very, very exciting game, but it went to penalties, and the U.S. ended up winning in PKs 3-2. Mexico versus Costa Rica. Mexico did a really good job in stopping Costa Rica's flow of their game and ended up winning that game 2-0. Guatemala versus Jamaica. Jamaica was all over Guatemala and was able to convert with one of the many opportunities that they had, and they won 1-0.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm talking with my VOA colleague, Mukbil Yabaro, about the CONCACAF Gold Cup football tournament. Mukbil, let's move on to the Gold Cup semifinal matches, the USA versus Panama and Jamaica against Mexico. How about recapping those two matches?
USA versus Panama. Panama had ample opportunities, even scored two goals, which were called offsides, and the game ended up being a tie. 1-1, went to penalty kicks, and although Matt Turner, the Arsenal man, the U.S. goalkeeper who has been their hero this entire tournament, really had a couple of nice saves, U.S. weren't able to convert, and Panama qualifies for the finals. Jamaica versus Mexico, I really thought this game was going to be a lot closer than it was. I'd given the edge to Mexico just simply because they've been here before. They have won so many of these CONCACAFs. Them alongside the U.S. really dominate this cup. And I didn't really see what I wanted to see from Jamaica. They have quite a few players that play in the English Premiership. So they have quality players on their side, but for whatever reason, just were not able to get the job done. Mexico finishes it off 3-0. Now to the finals on Sunday, Sonny. Panama versus Mexico. This one will be a headbanger.
Well, Muckbill, you mentioned Qatar advancing to the quarterfinals before losing to Panama. How did Qatar, the 2022 World Cup host, get in this regional tournament?
So tournaments like this regularly have invites, and they usually send invites out to, you know, teams across the world. A lot of European teams get the invite, but, you know, for their own reasons, they usually don't join these teams, these type of tournaments. You also got to think about it from this perspective. The U.S. and Mexico have been dominating this Gold Cup for years. The U.S. side that technically made it almost to the finals, I would say is not even, maybe might not even be the B side, really, right? If we look at the World Cup, the past World Cup, and the American players that were on that World Cup side, just to look at the numbers, right? We have, I would say, about 16 out of the 23 players selected to compete in this U.S. squad are from the MLS. And we do know that the MLS, you know, has gotten better throughout the years. It is becoming a competitive league. It is starting to, you know, get the likes of, we see Messi now, you know, coming to play for Inter Miami. So I'm not going to sit here and say that the league is not a good league, but there's just a different caliber of players that play in Europe. And we have, if we look at it, some of the stars that the U.S. played without in this Gold Cup. I'll name a few. Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, Sergino Dest, Florin Balogun, Gio Reyna, Jonas Musa, Brendan Aaronson, Ricardo Pepi, and Captain America himself, Christian Pulisic, who also just made the move from Chelsea to AC Milan. So, you know, if we're saying that the U.S. squad was able to get this far, just a penalty kick away from winning or making it to the finals with maybe the B side, maybe the C side, imagine if the full squad was here. I don't think it would even be in question. The U.S. side definitely would be in the finals and should be able to have won this Gold Cup.
Muckbill, a Colombia-born striker for the USA, Jesus Ferreira, a Gold Cup leading 7 goals. Ferreira plays for FC Dallas in Major League Soccer. Do you think maybe Ferreira earned a place on the USA's A team?
It's possible, you know, when you show out like this, you know, he had some really quality goals. He did miss some opportunities as well, but you know, that comes with the territory. You can't score everything. My thing is about Jesus Ferreira, using him in the position that he likes the most. I think that was the challenge. You know, sometimes when we were looking at this U.S. side, the challenge that they had, I think, was because they were overloaded in certain positions, they weren't able to play guys in positions that they naturally would play in. But I think, yeah, showing out like this, this is how you put your best foot forward. And who knows, maybe he's gotten the look from some European sides that might want him over there as well. So exciting future for the young man, Jesus Ferreira. Yeah, 7 goals is not to be joked with.
Well, Muckbill, looking ahead to Sunday's final, are there any particular players for Panama or Mexico who you'll be watching?
To me, the most dangerous man for the Panamanian side is Ismael Diaz. Ismael Diaz, he has 4 goals, so he's second in that golden boot race for the cup, right behind Ferreira. So he has 4 goals. He's been electric. I believe one of the goals also was called offsides. So he may have been even at the 5-goal mark by now if that one wasn't called offsides. And it was a tight one. It was a tight one as well. So from Panama, I would say him and Edgar Arcenas. Edgar also has 2 goals in the tournament. So those are the 2 guys that I would say from the Panamanian side. As for Mexico, I would say Luis Romo, Luis Chavez, and Orbelin Panada. All 3 have 2 goals. Let me throw in Henry Martin as well in there. He also has 2 goals. So the thing about the Mexican side that has been really on their side has been any given day, any of their guys can score for you. So they're not heavily reliant on a player or two. They have a plethora of guys that can go out there and get the job done. So if I were to put, you know, if I were to give either team an edge, I would say Mexico simply for the fact that they've been here before and they have a lot of players that, you know, have been playing together for a while at a high level and they kind of play off of each other. If we even look down the list of goal scorers, you have another 2 guys or 3 guys that have also scored. But you have anywhere between 7 to 8 players that have already scored for Mexico in the tournament.
Thanks, Muckbill. That's my VOA colleague, Muckbill Yabaro. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. You can follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook, Twitter, and at voaafrica.com. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. My Twitter handle is at VOA Sunny Sports. And if you go to voaafrica.com, you can listen online to the Sunny Side of Sports, as well as past episodes. Check out voaafrica.com. The Voice of America's English to Africa service is celebrating its 60th anniversary on August 4th. Help us celebrate by sharing your thoughts about the Sunny Side of Sports. Send a voice message or text to this WhatsApp number, +1-202-258-3076. Recall a favorite memory. That number again, +1-202-258-3076. And thanks for 60 years of support. Samson Omale joins us once again with another big package of African sports news. Sporty Friday greetings, Samson.
Sporty Friday greetings to you too, Sunny. The lineup for the semifinals of the 2023 CASAFA Cup is complete after the final round of matches were played in Group C on Wednesday. Malawi will take on Lesotho in the first semifinal clash on Friday, with neither side having lifted the coveted trophy before. The second semifinal sees host South Africa take on defending champions Zambia. Zambia were confirmed as the best runner-up when Mauritius lost to Mozambique in their last Group C encounter. Both matches will be played at the King Zwelithini Stadium. And now to the 2023 Women World Cup, being co-hosted by Australia and New Zealand. Zambia will make their World Cup debut against former champions Japan in their Group C opener on the 22nd of July in Hamilton, New Zealand. Captain Barbara Banda told reporters upon the squad's arrival in New Zealand that the team will be focusing resolutely on football in their first appearance at the FIFA Women's World Cup amidst allegations of sexual abuse in the Zambian women's national team setup.
On that, I'm not in the position of answering that because I'm just a player. My job is to be on the pitch, not on the technical side. I think as players, our mind is just on the pitch. The rest we leave to the management, and whatever comes up, it's up to them.
Zambia is ranked 77th in the world, but will fancy springing a surprise or two at the World Cup after drawing 3-3 with Switzerland and beating twice world champions Germany 3-2 in friendlies over the last couple of weeks.
It was a good game for us and a good preparation for the World Cup. You know, Germany is not a pushover team, but I think we really tried our best and at the end of the day, we carried 3 maximum points. That was important for us.
Elsewhere, the Super Falcons of Nigeria, 9-time African champions, will be hoping to match or surpass their best outing in the history of the Women's World Cup when the team made it to the quarterfinal stage. The multiple African champions have been drawn in Group B, where they will battle out against Canada, Ireland, and host Australia. Mercy Chuang is a sport journalist who has followed the Super Falcons' progress leading to the World Cup. She told the Sunny Side of Sports that despite the row with payment of allowances and bonuses rocking the team, the Super Falcons can still go far in the competition.
I am predicting a knockout stage round of 16 for the Super Falcons this time around. Now, Australia and Canada are tipped off to make it out of that group, but I say that Nigeria might just spring up a surprise, and I'm predicting that Nigeria will get to the knockout stage.
Chuan speaks further on the quality of players in the team and coach Randy Wardrum's technical ability.
We have many experienced players in our side. We have one of the oldest players of the competition who is also our captain at Super Falcons, Onome Ibi. We are hoping that they bring in that experience with the likes of Desire Oparanoze to be able to at least groom these young ones to be able to bring some sense of leadership. The last time we went to the World Cup, it was Thomas Denneby. Randy took over from him. Now, Randy has never been in a World Cup competition before with any national team. This is his first time. But we have seen how much he has been strategic in planning his friendlies against very big nations, very big footballing nations coming into this competition.
Away from football now to tennis. Tunisia's tennis star Ange Jabeur produced a superb comeback to beat Aryna Sabalenka from Belarus at Wimbledon in the women's semifinals on Thursday. The six-seeded Tunisian came back from a set down to beat Sabalenka to reach the women's singles final at Wimbledon for a second straight year. The Tunisian faced her toughest battle yet as Belarus' second-seeded Sabalenka dominated the first half of the match, but Jabeur eventually fought her way back to win 6-7, 6-4, 6-3. She will now play on seeded Czech Markéta Vondrousová in the final.
I'm very proud of myself because maybe old me would have lost the match today and went back home already. But I'm glad that I kept digging very deep and finding the strength.
In basketball, DR Congo is through to the semifinal stage of the ongoing FIBA AfroCAN tournament in Angola. The defending champions narrowly beat the hard-fighting Nigerians 74 to 72 points on Thursday at the Pahilio Motiasos de Luanda to move one step closer to successfully defending the crown they won in 2019. Coach Ogo Daudu of Nigeria says his side's slow start contributed to their loss.
We should have to address the issue of our slow start. It was the same thing that happened against Angola. It was the same thing that almost happened against Gabon too. And it happened today. So it's something that we have to go and work on and address. And in subsequent games, we hopefully will start very, very strong and don't have to struggle towards the end to catch up.
In other results, Rwanda qualified for the semifinals thanks to a hard-fought 73-63 victory over host Angola. The hosts thus fail in their quest for a first African title, while Rwanda can afford to dream of a historical podium finish. Yves Murenzi says his strategy was to make the host run for the ball, which eventually paid off for the Rwandese.
We know Angola play physical and they have a motivation because of the crowd, the home team. But our weapon today was to make them run and also make good execution on our plan. So the big challenge was actually the rebounding, because they dominated us in the paint. And when they shot, we make sure we rebound the ball and we go fast break.
In other results, Cote d'Ivoire booked their ticket for the semifinal thanks to a narrow 69-66 victory over Tunisia. Morocco completes the semifinal quartet after they defeated Kenya 55-46 points in Luanda.
Thanks, Samson. That's Samson Omale. The upcoming FIFA Women's World Cup will kick off on the heels of a groundbreaking FIFA decision that guarantees every participating female footballer in Australia and New Zealand at least $30,000. However, FIFPro, the global union for professional footballers, is concerned some players may not get paid properly. My VOA colleague Gwen Uten has details. Sport Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Last month's groundbreaking decision is a direct result of collective action taken last year when FIFPro sent a letter to FIFA President Gianni Infantino calling for improved conditions and an increase in prize money for Women's World Cup teams. The prize pool for the upcoming tournament is roughly three times higher than what FIFA offered in 2019, totaling $110 million. Following the landmark move, FIFPro stated that soccer's world governing body has, quote, listened to the voice of the players. However, this week, the union expressed concerns about whether or not payment allocations will, in fact, reach the players. In an interview with Reuters News, FIFPro General Secretary Jonas Berra-Hoffmann said, the union is doing all it can to ensure that prize money is dispersed to individuals and not federations.
The biggest thing probably at the minute is making sure that the agreement, the conditions, the compensation system that we were able to put in place together with FIFA are actually being implemented. So we're working with a number of teams, a number of unions to make sure that either domestic negotiations about the fine print of how this gets translated are being done correctly, or to hold certain MAs accountable to implementing the things that are meant to be in place.
FIFPro says at least a dozen of the 32 national teams heading into the World Cup do not have payment agreements in place. And that estimate has raised more concerns that prize money might not reach every World Cup player. Sarah Gregorius is the FIFPro head of strategy for women's football. She says in agreements that have been put in place, navigating the details can get complicated.
The number of players that have told me that, oh, we do ours camp by camp, and the leadership group, which is sometimes the captain and the two vice captains, have to sit with the federation in the first few days of the national team assembly and figure out the details of the agreement, how much they're going to get paid, what are the match appearance fees. The system, you would just imagine that in any other working environment. Jonas is my boss. Imagine if every Monday I had to sit down with him and negotiate what I'm getting paid that week. It's mad. This is the scenario that players find themselves in while they're also trying to train and play to perform for their country on the world stage. So one of the major things that we wanted to change is that attitude and set a new precedent around the way in which you speak to your national team players, the dialogue with the unions, the dialogue with the player representatives, to make it more professional.
Women's football has grown rapidly over the past several years, with the World Cup tournament doubling in size from 16 to 32 teams since 2011. But Jonas Berra-Hoffmann says the development of the women's game is at times patchy, and its rise in popularity has made way for a rise in protests against female inequality in the sport.
I think it's more prevalent than it's ever been in any other sport on a global stage. I don't think you've had this kind of coordinated or uncoordinated wave of speaking up, standing up, forcing change ever before. And again, Sarah just talked about multifactorial reasons for it, and they obviously exist between just probably the frustration with the realities, plus societal change, plus the international inspiration that you take from your colleagues who are succeeding with similar battles. But there's no doubt, and I think it really speaks the fact that there's a disconnect between where the game is going and how far the institutions in the different countries are able to follow that, and are sometimes willing to follow that. And if that bridge doesn't get crossed, then women's football can't grow in a structural manner in the way that it deserves to and that it should.
FIFPro recently conducted a study with Football Benchmark that sheds light on an uneven playing field between women's national teams. The report shows that Haiti have played less than a third of the games in the run-up to their Women's World Cup debut compared with reigning champions, the United States. The report also unveiled that European teams played twice as many games as those in Asia and the Caribbean. FIFPro believes the lack of competitive games has held back further development of women's football. The union is calling for standalone World Cup qualifying competitions in confederations that cover the Americas, Asia, and Africa to provide more playing opportunities for women in the sport. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And that wraps up the July 14th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.